am focusing today on the issue of substance abuse during pregnancy and neonatal abstinence syndrome, and I'm happy to have the opportunity to talk with y'all today about some exciting projects happening across the U.S. At both the state level as well as in communities and in health systems. And I have nothing to disclose. Neonatal abstinence syndrome is a clinical diagnosis that can occur after birth and after intrauterine exposure to certain drugs. Withdrawal happens because that exposure is abruptly stopped when the baby is born. So I'll be talking today about opioids because of the increasing prevalence in prescription drug abuse, but the negative health effects and withdrawal symptoms can also happen due to other substances, including alcohol. And there was a 2012 article in JAMA, and many of you in the room may be familiar with it, by Dr. Stephen Patrick that noted the increasing incidence of NAS births and the increased use of healthcare resources as a result. And so since then, this issue's gotten significant media attention, and it's provided some motivation for us, at least, to start looking at what a comprehensive public health approach might look like and how we can bring multiple systems together in the interest of providing more coordinated and compassionate care. And because NAS is a multi-generational problem and because it spans so many phases in the lives of women and their infants, there are a lot of state agencies, healthcare providers, community-based services that are potentially involved. And so I work with the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials, and so we see this as an area where health departments can play a really significant role. So I'll be discussing some recommendations from that perspective. Here are a couple of objectives and what I hope to cover in the presentation this morning. As I mentioned just a couple moments ago, at the state level, health departments are really well positioned to support those types of public health approaches that really take into account the complex issues associated with pregnancy and with opioid exposure. And they're also in a good position to really take a look at those policies and implement programs that are responsible for, at least in some part, preventing and treating substance abuse and addiction more broadly, really as conditions that are driving this NAS epidemic. And women that use drugs or alcohol during pregnancy are often met with a really punitive stance that doesn't take into account the context of their lives. So, for example, it doesn't take into account the impact that things like violence, trauma, poverty, homelessness might have. So social determinants of health as a framework is really useful here, as it is in so many other areas of public health. And that being said, there are a lot of unanswered questions about how to effectively identify and treat infants with NAS, but I'll talk about some of the current activities and quality improvement efforts that are working on resolving some of these gaps. And then finally, I will outline some recommendations from a report that ASTO developed that highlights some state examples and proposes opportunities to work with and across other agencies and sectors to ensure that we are delivering that kind of good, consistent care and linking services. So I have a couple of introductory slides that describe ASTO's approach and our work on these issues concerning prescription drug misuse and overdose. We know that there has been considerable attention surrounding unintentional drug overdoses, and that for every death, you're seeing associated treatment admissions, ED visits, and numbers of non-medical users and individuals with substance use disorders and addiction. And many people are now on board, fortunately, with this idea of a comprehensive approach and one that spans this continuum and is really inclusive of all of these principles and the appropriate strategies and interventions within each of these four domains. And so the comprehensive approach really recognizes that there's a need to regulate the diversion of controlled substances and really balance that with ensuring that people who need these medications for appropriate pain management treatment have access to them, and that's not compromised. So every year, ASTO launches a year-long initiative that's focused on a national health issue where there are opportunities for public health to affect change by implementing policies and applying effective strategies and interventions. Last year, we launched what we call a 15 by 15 challenge that urged state health officials, together with their leadership teams and the administrators of other agencies within their states, to commit to identifying and strengthening programs that really do drive down rates of misuse and overdose. And we're aiming for 15% by the end of 2015. And so I'm pleased to share that we have 46 states and two territories that are committed to this effort so far. And the commitments that we've received from state public health officers really do span all four of these categories that you see there on the right, kind of ranging from prevention, overdose prevention, provider protocols and guidelines to optimizing state prescription drug monitoring programs, working with drug courts and other partners in the criminal justice system, and ensuring access to treatment and ongoing recovery support. So then, as we're characterizing approaches to NAS, the things that are included in that comprehensive framework are also a pretty good fit here, too. And what this slide says is that while we're talking about preventing substance abuse, while we're talking about preventing that vertical transmission of drug dependence, so preventing NAS, we really have to be thinking about the social determinants of health and about the risk and protective factors associated with substance use. And so while it's not always the case, oftentimes these women and their families are exposed to toxic stress over a prolonged period of time. And so the services that we can be providing to support them in both parenting and in maintaining good health themselves are really critical here. So in this sense, the comprehensive approach provides the foundation and resources over this continuum of care to link individuals and their families with the needed services. So substance abuse treatment, mental health services, early intervention programs, family planning, and peer-based recovery support. And again, just to reiterate, because there are so many different handoffs and where we're really interested in looking at this issue, it is kind of in that place where there's so many handoffs between different agencies and providers. This is where that collaborative infrastructure is really key, so that these people aren't getting lost as a result of all the interactions and points of transfer between different services. So next I'm going to talk about the report that we developed as kind of a resource and a roadmap for helping health departments work with various systems across the state on this issue. And I'm going to show some recommendations, and I'll just point out that some of the supporting documentation and additional context for each of the recommendations is available in the report. You can download it from our website. We also have hard copies that we're able to provide you, so just come up and talk to me afterwards if you're interested in getting a copy. And our intent with this project was really to, you know, again, look at how state health agencies can really be promoting better health outcomes for mothers and infants who are affected by opioid dependence. Lots of unanswered questions about how to operationalize and approach this work, I'd say specifically in the area of data collection and tracking, treatment approaches for NAS infants, both pharmacological and non-pharmacological approaches, and then importantly, I think, negotiating that stigma and the ways that women with addiction are often treated or have historically been treated. And so I organized the next two slides by timeframes for mom and infant, and I'm borrowing from a 2009 report that was put out by SAMHSA that looks at state responses to substance-exposed infants, and it gives a nice five-point intervention framework that we also followed in looking at this issue. So in terms of primary prevention, health departments can be supporting each of these items in some capacity. And safe and appropriate prescribing, the first point there, that's a major priority for state medical boards, and lots of state health departments have taken steps to ensure that things like their PDMPs, and other types of clinical decision-making supports are available there at the point of care so that all prescribers who are interacting with a woman throughout her pregnancy have access to this information alongside other types of essential healthcare information that they would be pulling up. Raising awareness about the risks associated with the use of prescribed medications is something that the public health community has really taken on, and it's a message that I think we need to continue to refine in preventing addiction among women of childbearing age. And we've also suggested, and this kind of goes, this speaks to that primary prevention aspect, we also suggest that clinicians who are prescribing medication for pain management, for psychiatric or neurologic conditions, or as part of an opioid replacement therapy, that they're really in a good position to talk with their patients about family planning services and contraceptive methods to prevent unplanned pregnancies in women that are taking these drugs therapeutically or who are at risk for misuse. There also might be some unmet reproductive health needs, particularly around this issue of contraception, so this is an opportunity to initiate those conversations about the importance of having a concurrent contraception to reduce unintended fetal exposure to these drugs and other substances. And in terms of identifying and managing opioid dependence during pregnancy, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists' position is that screening for substance abuse should really be part of complete obstetric care, and so we can be helping to really advance prenatal screenings by advance prenatal screenings as the expected standard of care by really encouraging and normalizing these dialogues that are happening in your physician's office or wherever these screenings should take place. And some states have expanded ESPRT coverage for their Medicaid programs. And one issue that providers and obstetricians have identified is really the concern that if they do screen someone, if they're doing universal screenings and they screen someone for substance abuse, you know, where are they going to refer them to? Oftentimes there's no place to send them. So I think that this is a really significant challenge that speaks to why we need to work to improve treatment capacity. And I won't speak in too much detail about managing opioid dependence in pregnancy, but we do talk about treatment for both mom and baby in greater detail in the report. But one thing that I will say about this, and that I think one of the goals of medication-assisted treatment that I think oftentimes gets overlooked, is empowering the mother to really take charge of her recovery. Pregnancy is an important time for initiating these services, and the federal substance abuse block grants actually require states to put aside a proportion of these funds for services for pregnant women and women with dependent children. And so care coordination is really important, and one of the recommendations that's presented in the report is that states can be better tracking the number of pregnant women who are referred for treatment services, as well as their treatment outcomes for women that are identified as part of these prenatal screenings. We highlight a number of different approaches and scoring tools like the Finnegan scale that are used to screen for NAS, and sometimes there's a lot of variability in how these infants are subsequently cared for. And we've found that this is one of the areas where there continues to be a lot of deliberation and ongoing study about the most optimal protocols for identifying and treating NAS. So you might find out if your hospital has a protocol, a written protocol, for diagnosing and managing NAS. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that every nursing caring for infants with NAS develop a protocol that defines when and how you screen for maternal substance abuse, as well as a standardized plan for evaluating infants who are showing signs of withdrawal. But this doesn't always happen. And so those same substance exposure protocols might also include guidance, for example, on when it's appropriate to report to external agencies. So correctly diagnosing NAS has implications for the family beyond the medical arena, just because of child protection laws and those that require reporting. And some states, depending on where you live, substance use during pregnancy can be considered a form of child abuse under child welfare statutes. So it's certainly a fine line, and so we really need to be careful that we're not creating this type of punitive atmosphere that really disincentivizes women from seeking treatment or prenatal care, for that matter, out of fear of losing custody of their child. So considering these in that context of a public health framework, taking a more public health approach as opposed to a criminal one can increase opportunities to involve moms in screening, counseling, and addiction treatment. And finally, while there needs to be more research on the long-term health outcomes associated with NAS, in the short term, we need to strengthen collaborations between clinical providers, community agencies, home visiting programs, really important, and state agencies to track drug-exposed infants throughout the first year of life and beyond. And so the last point that I'll make on this slide is that being a new mom is stressful. So that discharge plan needs to take into account her needs for substance abuse treatment and to think about all of the potential vulnerabilities within the home environment, so things like safe sleep or abusive head trauma. These things really need to be taken into account in terms of ongoing needs for the infant and the family unit as a whole. So if the risk of relapse is high, stabilizing the mother is one way of ensuring that the infant safety is taken care of, and then, as I mentioned, perinatal home visiting programs in this way can be really one way of promoting better outcomes. So I have a couple of state examples here, and it was my intent to wind down with these, but I may be running a little short on time. So I'll just mention that these projects are highlighted in – oh, I'm good on time. Okay. I'll talk about them. These states are documented in the report, so we'll go through, and they each sort of capture and contextualize some of those key points around data and surveillance, promoting access to treatment, and then recognizing the need for improved protocols for NAS diagnosis and management. So in Tennessee, officials realized how valuable it would be to have a real-time data on NAS, and the Commissioner of Health made NAS a reportable condition a couple years ago. It was effective January 1st of 2013, and a web-based reporting portal was established on the Department of Health website. And one piece of information that they captured in the report in the portal at the time was the source of maternal opiate use. And so Tennessee also looked at its Medicaid claims to look at different opportunities for prevention and intervention, and the number of women in TennCare that were prescribed narcotics for more than 30 days and concurrently prescribed contraceptives was especially surprising because the majority of these women were on narcotic medications, but they were not on any form of birth control. So there's, again, that missed opportunity to talk about primary prevention, and this is kind of an area, a suggested area for targeting more educational initiatives to raise awareness among providers and women. And in Vermont's approach to making opioid screening and medication-assisted therapy an expected component of care, this takes place within their health home model. In 2012, Vermont's Medicaid Health Home Program proposed having buprenorphine prescribers working in conjunction with nurses and substance abuse and mental health counselors serving opioid dependents in their communities. And so under this model, and it's called the hub and spoke model in Vermont, only more complicated patients would need to be cared for in methadone treatment programs. So it works to really integrate addiction treatment services along this continuum of care. And how that relates to our work is that it allows more women to stay within their communities and access addiction and mental health services within the primary care setting. And then finally, we have an example from Nationwide Children's Hospital in Columbus, Ohio. And they were seeing, like many hospitals, an increase in the number of infants with NAS. They had an average length of stay of 31 days for infants diagnosed in 2009, and so the hospital established a quality improvement team. Based on a staff survey, the greatest challenges in caring for infants with NAS included poor or inconsistent communication between providers, a high degree of subjectivity, and a lack of competency with using one of those tools, with using the Finnegan scale, as well as stressful family dynamics within this patient population and little to no discharge planning. So to address some of these issues, they implemented some training courses for the nursing staff, and they there were super users who kind of went through an intensive training, and they were really looked at as sort of the go-to people, sort of in-house resources for supporting and ensuring ongoing training at the staff level. So as a result, they found that the inter-rater reliability of scoring using the Finnegan tool actually improved, and that overall there was better assessment and documentation of withdrawal symptoms in the charts. And so I just wanted to close with a couple of references to some of the perinatal quality improvement collaboratives that are happening across states. And a lot of these councils have websites where you can find out more information about these projects, as well as contact information if you're interested, if you're from a state and you're interested in kind of getting looped in with these efforts. And much of what is happening right now is kind of testing and documenting quality improvement principles and sharing data both at the state level and in professional networks to really help move systems toward standards of care and better measures for evaluating NAS-related health outcomes. And so I will close with that. My contact information is on the slide if you'd like to get in touch, and thank you for your time.